This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Russell Brodsky. He is the Director of Federal Sales for Siemens Enterprise Communications. Russell, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming. Give us a little background, please.
Okay, well, I guess my responsibilities are for North American sales and operations to the federal government for Siemens Enterprise Communications. In the early 80s, I started my career off actually with a magazine publisher on Madison Avenue in New York City as the assistant director of office services. We handled everything from changing a light bulb to implementing the first word processor in this publishing company. Big old MyCom CPUs.
Not a Wang?
With 12-inch floppy diskettes. And, you know, the manual said this is a cursor getting into this interesting field of telecommunications. And so in 1983, I went to work for a company called Rome in New York City and dealt with a bunch of the traders down in Wall Street and materialized my career through Stamford, Connecticut in handling some of our largest global accounts and held various different positions in management, in marketing, in sales and support to wind up here in the greater D.C. area.
Yeah, and if you were working in New York, Stamford was a wonderful commute. Would the train still run from there?
Yes, Metro North was a pretty good direct route in and out of the city. It kind of a different environment. I'm glad to see that this area is kind of starting to head in that direction as well.
Yeah, and travel is going to play a significant role in this, so stay tuned with that thought. So, which magazine was it?
It was a magazine called Institutional Investor.
Oh, yeah. They're still around.
Yeah. And, you know, they had quite a thriving business, a newsletter business, and a conference business that they ran. It was a really interesting venture back then, being right across the street from St. Patrick's Cathedral on Madison Avenue. It was a really... really neat experience.
Yeah, I bet. I wonder what their take was on the Facebook IPO last week, but we won't go there.
Right.
I'm a LinkedIn boy anyway.
There we go.
All right. There's been lots of changes going on at Siemens Enterprise over the last couple of years. Give us sort of a 25,000-foot overview of what's going on, a deep dive into your areas.
Sure. Well, I can't start with that deep dive without going back a little bit in history. And I've got to share with you, you know, over 160 years ago, Siemens was really founded on three core technologies. They had the electric dynamo, the X-ray tube, and the telegraph. So the telegraph business kind of grew into this communications business, one of the cornerstones. And fast forward over the years... we had the dot-com bubble burst, and, you know, I remember distinctly when I was running a sales force that sold into the communication space, sold into carriers and internet service providers, waking up one morning and recognizing the prospect universe had gone from 10,000 to about 100 overnight. It really had shrunk down once that bubble burst. Well, Siemens recognized that, and... went out looking for partners for their communications business, which was, you can imagine, a very difficult decision considering it was one of those founding technologies for Siemens. So they had a couple of options. They could have closed the division completely. They could have sold it off to a private equity firm that would have kind of chopped it up and sold off the assets, or they could have merged with an industry competitor. I think the downside of that was that there's always a lot of product rationalization that goes on with that sort of move, and it gets kind of sloppy with people and products and whatnot, and confusing to the marketplace. So they found a company called the Gores Group, and Gores came to the table with a couple of assets. They came to the table with this company called SER, which was a relatively small contact center company, and they came to the table with a player in the data communications and security space called Enterasys. Well, this seemed to be a really good complementary match for the two companies to come together. So they did. They brought those two together. There's a joint venture between Siemens AG and Gores Communications. Gores has operational responsibility. And they came in, put the two companies together, or the three companies together. In the strategy of developing a new go-to-market for this Siemens Enterprise Communications organization, this group of companies. So here we are. There's been quite a number of changes that have occurred organizationally and in our strategy that have really played into where we are today and where we're going. Number one is we've kind of gotten out of this whole concept of manufacturing goods and really into a realm of software development. And that's kind of where a lot of the product set seems to be going. And when you have that software development edge, you're talking about a lot of services that can be implemented from a perspective of professional services and managed services, as well as lifecycle. That's an ongoing discussion. But that's kind of where we are. And what that also does is it really lends itself more towards a partner-friendly type of model, because when it comes down to the go-to-market, there's a couple different options you have, right?
Pretty limited, but yeah.
Yeah. So number one, they could have made a fairly significant investment in building out a sales force, building out the infrastructure. And of course, that translates into time and money. Or they could basically enhance their tools, enhance their marketing efforts, and embrace partners and distribution channels as a mechanism for their go-to-market. So what they did was they kind of looked at the markets overall from a global basis, and looked at the North American market and said, hey, lo and behold, we're number whatever in the market, certainly not number one or two. This is a really good growth potential. So let's make the investment here. So what they decided to do was to make the investment not in the direct go-to-market, but in the indirect go-to-market.
Right. Okay, so you're technically a channel player, but no longer in the hardware arena. Are you totally out of the hardware biz?
No, I mean, we do manufacture some equipment that's kind of a necessity, because we do have quite a significant legacy on a global basis of embedded hardware that needs to be needs some sustainment,
right?
Over time. So we have not necessarily totally gone out of that business and thrown that to the wolves. We're still supporting our embedded base of customers.
Okay, and part of that embedded base has always been government. Yes,
absolutely. I mean, through the years. Well, Siemens overall has had a relationship with the U.S. military, for example, since World War II, in the reconstruction of Germany, and it's been quite a good relationship over the years with the military, and transcended into the United States. Our federal government business has been very healthy, and we've been at it probably 25 years just in the U.S., putting some focus and emphasis on the marketplace.
What are the key areas you guys play in?
Well, we're big players in the unified communication space, which let me help kind of define that, because it's one of those terms like security. It's very broad, and depending on who you talk to, they have a different interpretation. For us, unified communication means basically bringing together the different aspects of communications technology, such as voice, conferencing, web collaboration, facsimile, email, and instant messaging, all wrapped around a presence type of umbrella. So we do that from a communications perspective, and that's kind of one of our flagship go-to-market solutions. Supporting that, we have contact center solutions, of course, with that SER company coming in, and we've had a very robust contact center practice dating back to the Rome days, and even going into some of our partnerships that we've had with some very large solution providers like Genesys, who is one of the market leaders from a contact center perspective. We're one of the largest integrators of the Genesys technology on a global basis. And then we also provide a dispatch command and control and E911 solution set that's basically become the benchmark in several areas of the military. So it's a global based system. The value that that our customers see in it is, especially when you talk about the military, there's a lot of folks coming in and out of certain positions. And because our user interface is very easy to understand, it really shortens the training cycle and gets people productive fast.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, back after these messages.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Russell Brodsky. Russell's the Director of Federal Sales for Siemens Enterprise Communications. Russell, how big is the Siemens business in government?
Well, the Siemens Enterprise Communications business in government on a global basis is about $40, $50 million. It's not a real significant number, but growing year over year on a fairly steady basis. Siemens overall does a tremendous amount of business. It's in the billions. But our little cottage industry in the communications sector is about $40, $50 million or so.
But the potential for the communication side is tremendous.
It is, no question. And you know, that begs the issue of investment, because this marketplace, as everybody well knows, is the type of business where if you make the investments, you're going to get the return. But you need to make those investments with a strategic mind and be patient. I think in almost every case that I'm aware of, the payoff is significant.
Right. It's the Gretzky model: skate to where the puck is going to be, not to where it's been.
Right.
But you guys have changed your, you indicated this in the first segment, you've changed your sales model to be more partner-centric. So you're taking a sub role, sometimes you prime, you're going to partner on gigs. Who are you working with, and what's your criteria for partner selection?
So I can honestly tell you that 5 years ago, our model was about 80% direct and 20% through partners. And we've really flipped it tremendously, so that to the point where we're almost 100% indirect. We sell through companies. We sell to companies for them to resell. And that's kind of how we have really adopted our way forward. So we have strategic alliances with three companies in particular, Verizon, IBM, AT&T, to name a few. We focus on a couple of large systems integrators like Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, SAIC, and Northrop Grumman. And we have some small business partners as well, like Microtech, ActionNet, Transtel, Vets America, to name a few. Our primary go-to-market had been on an opportunistic basis. So in other words, my business development folks are chartered with going out there and drumming up business. And at the end of the day, they really don't necessarily care about very much other than the fact that the customer is going to buy Siemens Enterprise Communications. So they're chartered to go out and drum up the business and then source it through some of these strategic partners and channel alliance partners at the end of the day, right? So our go-to-market had been primarily opportunistic. So we see an opportunity, we go and drive the opportunity, we go and find a partner that's the appropriate partner. We kind of want to change that now and evolve that into more of a strategic element. So what we did was we went out and looked at the marketplace and said, okay, where are there partners that have complementary offerings in the marketplace? Where if I went into them and talked to them about my solution set and what we could do for their government customers, they would A, understand it, and B, be able to embrace it, and C, really help us take it to market. So we've kind of used that, and we've kind of narrowed down the focus a little bit more towards certain strategic partners. And in particular, some of those partners evolve around, there's been quite a bit of activity, procurement activity around small businesses, service-disabled, veteran-owned businesses in the communication sector, where they're talking about hosted services and other IT services. So we've been looking at those areas in particular to fill voids where we're not and where we can't be and where we can partner with those small businesses along with some of the large systems integrators in our strategic alliances.
Okay, so do you look at opportunities like Alliance Small Business or 8A Stars and then target some of the companies who would be good fits culturally, partner-wise for you and say, hey, we can support you through this vehicle?
Absolutely. Yeah, so we go out and look at those large government-wide acquisition contracts and seek out partners that are on those contracts. So, for example, the Vets contract, mm-hmm. Vets America is a prime on that contract, and we looked to them to be a partner with that. We have some other contracts that have brought us to Microtech, for example, who's been an up and coming player in the area for quite some time.
Right, they've grown very nicely.
Yes, and even in some of our specific business, we have small businesses that are affiliated with service disabled veteran owned companies like Transtel out of Oklahoma, and they're very effective at penetrating certain areas of the government marketplace. That's kind of our way to market with a lot of this stuff. We've come to the realization that, A, we can't be all things to all people, and B, that because of kind of some of our status and our niche, we can't necessarily be out in front and take a prime position on a lot of these contracts.
Well, there's a lot of companies new to the market or relatively new to the market don't understand is taking a prime position is an extraordinary endeavor. And one that, number one, nobody competes solo for any business, period.
Right. It's a tremendous investment to take those prime positions and tremendous risk also potentially involved. And we've just come to the realization that, hey, look, we've got guys out there that will do the heavy lifting. That'll make it easy for our partners to sell our stuff, even through some of the back end, any back end issues that we may have. We make it easy for our partners to do business with us, and we know that that's critical to our success.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys carry a GSA schedule?
We have our GSA schedule through two prime contractors, so we don't even have our own.
Well,
which was a major transformation. I mean, 10 years ago we had our own GSA schedule, and then we basically went to a company, Synex Corporation.
Yep.
And we saw value in going to Synex because of the fact that they have a fairly extensive dealer network that I could open up my products and services to through their GSA schedule. And then we have another Siemens company that also has parts of our schedule, and they also help us facilitate some business.
Yeah, there's another aspect that a lot of people really don't get. For people selling products and software, it is usually better to go to a company that has that established relationship, because if you're carrying your own schedule, you got to sell it.
Exactly. And not only that, but now we've got certain solution sets that are out there that are going to be exclusive through our distribution model. So not even my sellers, my business development people will not be really carrying and pushing these products. They'll be there to assist should one of our partners require it.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, this is a 100% distribution solution set.
And this is working, I assume, much better than, I mean, you've been there long enough to have seen both sides of this coin.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a much better model, much fewer headaches, if you will, at the end of the day. And we feel like it really adds to our ability to be nimble in the marketplace and to be dynamic. So we can, even though we're headed towards this this strategic partnership element in selecting a few go-to-market partners, because we do not want to be oversubscribed.
Right.
Because I don't think that really makes anybody happy. I mean, nobody's happy with single-digit margins on stuff, regardless of the volume, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to make some decent coin on whatever it is that they're selling.
Right.
And the only way to really do that is to ensure that you've got select few distribution channels that are going to be able to handle some of those different elements in the marketplace.
There you go. So. Yeah. All right. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages.
You're never too old to play. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. As we age, it's important to stay active and involved with families and communities. Lots of activities can help seniors remain engaged, physically fit, and mentally healthy. Kathy Greenlee is administrator of the HHS Administration for Community Living.
To just physically participate in the day, whether it's something like aqua aerobics or walking, or simply making sure that you get up during the day and move around, those are all important as a part of supporting mental health, physical health, the basics.
Simply being there for seniors can make a huge difference as they get older.
Family support is really critical to seniors. They want to remain connected to their families and their communities, and it's important that we provide supports that allow them to maintain those relationships.
Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Russell Brodsky, Director of Federal Sales for Siemens Enterprise Communications. Russell, at the beginning of the show, you indicated that many, many moons ago, one of the core businesses of Siemens was the telegraph. And in the first segment, we referenced the fact that you lived in Stanford and probably were working a fair amount in New York. And, you know, nice commute because of the train. But not everybody has the ability to have a, shall we say, a seamless commute. And those in the national capital area especially have perhaps the worst commute in the country. And our parent station upstairs here, WTOP, has been talking about these, you know, three-hour one-way commutes. Who has the worst commute gig? Man, I've been home-based for 27 years now, so I have no knowledge of this other than my occasional travels. But the first telework centers were set up here almost 20 years ago now. And you guys have been playing directly or indirectly in that game for how long?
Well, at least 10 years. You know, it's really interesting to see how the technology has evolved from the old telegraph days where everything had to be wired and And Siemens was one of the first companies. I think there was commercials on television not too long ago about them laying the first transatlantic cable in 1847 or something to that effect, for some guy that was trying to corner the silver market in Colorado or something, into the telex realm. I'm sure a lot of us remember the old telex machines. Well, Siemens was a dominant player in the telex world for quite some time, into where we are today with the whole concept of virtual companies. And we say that it's better to be a virtual company than virtually a company, but fundamentally it's become a standard for every company because of the fact that it addresses a lot of things. Now, it doesn't address certain elements and certain job categories where, you have to be in a certain spot. You can't be a remote fireman,
for example. If you're in a skiff, you're in a skiff.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But there are quite a number of administrative positions, as well as other positions that require not just teleworking, but mobility. And those are kind of synonymous to a certain extent. The key issue with the teleworking centers and teleworking in general was based on the fact that we have to have security wrapped around a lot of the things that we're doing with the government. And that is still a paramount requirement for everything we do. But the other aspect is, aside from the ecological aspects of being green and cutting down on traffic and cutting down on commute, as well as the health aspects for a lot of the stress and strain that it puts on workers commuting to and from work 3 hours each way, an hour and a half each way, it's tremendous. Then there's another aspect which we have all faced in the government, which is, the workforce in general. And the workforce in the federal government is kind of aging to a certain extent. And there's a lot of effort going on to recruit, hire, and retain top talent coming out of schools that are not necessarily based in the Washington, D.C. area. So those technologies have to be pervasive amongst the college graduates coming out in all areas of the country, hence the breaking down the walls, so to speak, and reaching out to a lot of these potential workers. And the government is competing with industry for that top talent, and so the technology becomes potentially a differentiator for the government to attract and retain that talent. Again, the objective is to basically ensure that people can work anywhere with any device with the same user experience that they have if they were sitting at their desk.
Let me give you a weird example here. Last night I went into my son's room. Yesterday afternoon after school, he said, "I want to go over to Brent's house." It's school night. You're not going anywhere. Okay. 15-year-old kid, sophomore or freshman in high school. So I go up to his room last night at 7 o'clock, and they're Skyping, him and his buddy Brent. They're Skyping, playing the same game online. So it's like they're in the same room anyway.
It's amazing, the way that our kids are communicating in almost non-real-time or non-face-to-face manners. When we were kids, we would meet down at the corner or in the schoolyard or make a phone call or something to somebody. That doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
These kids are connected via social media like Facebooks of the world and Twitter and Skyping all over the place.
Facebook's getting old for kids, by the way.
Yeah, there's new technologies coming up every day, and certainly I have an appreciation for that, having a 16-year-old sophomore in high school and a 13-year-old in middle school. So, we're right in the thick of the whole thing. But still, that exemplifies, the requirements for employers. To have that stuff readily available to make it attractive for these folks to continue to do their work the way that they're used to working, so that we don't have to take these kids, these young people, and force them to work a certain way, where somebody else in a different industry would come and basically say, hey, you live in Boise, Idaho? That's great. All right. You can still be part of my company here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. And, you know, your marketing guy, Bob Goslin, and I have worked together on and off for 20 plus years now. And our job has always been to figure out how buyers are influenced, how they get their information. And the transformation over the last 24 months on how they're getting information on products, services, et cetera, has radically changed. Now, that being said, peer recommendations still is top, but how those peers are sharing that information is radically different.
It is, and it's happening on such a dynamic and instantaneous basis. Just the volumes of information that we're dealing with on a daily basis now is astounding compared to when I was entering the workforce in the early 80s. Just a tremendous transformation. But the ability to be able to manage that stuff, to filter it out, to really get to the information and the communication links that the user wants to have when they want to have it is key to managing and balancing that whole concept of work-life balance as well, which we sometimes overlook. I know, you know, as a professional, very often we're on call 24/7. And I think the good news is that technology has enabled us to break down the walls of the office. And that's a good thing, because we no longer have to deal necessarily with those tremendous commutes. But it's also kind of a bad thing, because we can be on a baseball field coaching third base, and you know, have to take a phone call because we're still on call and technically still working.
Exactly. So let me ask a slightly different question here. You guys, your office is basically wherever you are, and you are your division is virtual. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yeah. The whole company is virtual. So the whole concept of a headquarters, I guess, is necessary from a fiscal perspective.
Got to have a sign on a building.
Right. Exactly. You know, and is it more relevant to have a sign on a building or a sign on a website? I'm not sure anymore. There's probably definitely more eyes going to the website than there are to your building.
And maybe a mobile.
And in the government area in particular, mobility is key, because I think what you're going to see over time is, again, this concept of breaking down the walls of more than just telecommuting, but virtualization of the worker and the workspace, really being a dynamic insertion into the way the government does its business.
Cool. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Russell Brodsky, Director of Federal Sales for Siemens Enterprise Communications. Communications is a theme that's kind of running through this, and it's kind of ironic that now that telework is almost accepted by government, it's likely to be superseded by all of this cloud activity. The deployment of the cloud is really going to be huge. So you guys are involved in a couple of aspects of providing services through the cloud, especially the voice aspect. What is voice over cloud?
Yeah, well, I think that this is, again, one of these interesting technologies that may have a different implementation ramification in the government than it would in industry. In other words, generally speaking, in industry, you're talking about public cloud that's carrier-oriented and just dropping in the ability to make a telephone call or to initiate contact to anybody on a buy and billing on a buy-the-drink basis or a buy-the-call basis, if you will. I think the government aspect of it, because of the security requirements, and I know that NIST is working on helping to define some of those security requirements for cloud services, is more relegated towards a private cloud, which essentially would mean having a government-approved data center to help facilitate these cloud offerings, or more of a hosted type of service through a government-owned data center. So that those types of services could be deployed in a similar fashion to a public cloud. No question, they could be billed the same. They could be offered the same. One of the interesting components of that, though, is how they truly take advantage of all those different unified communications and collaborative technologies that can go along with that. I mean, what we've seen is the proliferation of cloud services surrounding primarily email services, and that's come through a lot of data center consolidation and consolidation of a lot of email licenses and servers, as well as just general operating system, Microsoft Office, you know, going up into the cloud, those types of services up in the cloud. Voice is certainly an interesting next component for cloud services. There are certainly some challenges that go along with that as well.
Okay. So what is the Siemens play in this arena, and what kind of contracts do you see rolling out? And I don't know if you want to get into partners or not, but if you do, you can certainly talk about that.
Well, sure. It's interesting that this type of an environment really does kind of set up itself for the next generation networks, if you will, for the government. I think what's key is to ensure that we don't have a lot of silos being built as the transition occurs into a cloud environment. So if you have email going into the cloud, and then you have some other types of services going into the cloud, very often those services are not integrated into a means that can effectively ensure a collaborative environment with the end user.
More silos.
More silos, right. So I think it's important for everybody to kind of be wary of that. Of course, you know, I think the, I know the obvious is the fiscal pressures being applied as being a main driver for a lot of the migration to cloud services, because it eliminates the requirement for capital funds, operationalizes everything, and also then enables these technologies to be pervasive throughout an entire enterprise from wherever they are. Contracts we see coming out, they'll be available. I know the networks contract has a CLINS on it already for these types of services, for voice services that are hosted or cloud-oriented. There'll be other contracts that are going to be competed on an individual agency basis for this. DISA is looking at their next-generation networks for IP services. So we see these things coming along slowly but surely. There have been some government agencies that have been out on the forefront of this stuff and have learned quite a bit from the deployment of some of these technologies. So, but the major advantage, I mean, just take a look at what I believe it's Harvard now, has gone into this borderless campus environment where they're literally offering some classes free to folks that want to take these classes online. And that's the type of scenario that you can really come across with this cloud type of technology in a collaborative form, whether it be video oriented through, you know, just a camera on a communications device, whether it be an iPad or a laptop of some sort, or a telephone or voice over IP device, whatever.
Okay. Give your, we haven't done this so far, give your web address, please. Where can people get a little more info?
Sure. It's www.siemens-enterprise.com.
Siemens-enterprise.com.
Correct.
Russell, really great to have you on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. This is not my day job, boys and girls. If you are not aware, the Government Market Master Program is located at Capital College. Our courses start June 21 and will be ongoing. You can find all of the information on the Government Market Master Group on LinkedIn or at capital-college.edu/GMM. Thanks for listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.